Welcome back, friends, to Nahum chapter 3. Melanie Hurlbus here. In this chapter, the prophet Nahum denounces Nineveh with such graphically violent, sexual, and sarcastic imagery that if you're listening to this book as a family, you'll want to pause this guide to listen to when the kids are not around. So I'll give you a second to adjust accordingly. In chapter 2, Nahum has already reported the upcoming defeat of Nineveh. Her river gates are thrown open and the palace is collapsing. Nineveh's inhabitants are exiled and carried away. The empire is crumbling as its many voices are silenced. The Lord is against the city, and it cannot stand. God's hurricane of judgment is coming, and its impact on Nineveh will be devastating. For the faithful in Judah, the fulfillment of Nahum's vision is still 50 years in the future. But for us, the overthrow of Nineveh in 612 BC is history. Confident of Nineveh's future demise, Nahum shifts in chapter 3 in genre and tone from prophetic vision to a satirical woe oracle. So let's pause here for a minute to find our bearings with this type of literature in the prophets. Woe oracles are like the lyrics of a funeral song that grieves a tragic or devastating death before it happens. The prophets often use them with the hopes of bringing God's people to their senses before it really is too late. Nahum goes a step further in this chapter and uses this woe oracle as dark satire. Think Nahum appearing on the Colbert Report to hold a mock funeral for Nineveh and singing this song. Let's begin in verse 1. Woe to the city of blood, full of lies, full of plunder, never without victims. The crack of whips, the clatter of wheels, galloping horses and jolting chariots, charging cavalry, flashing swords and glittering spears. Many casualties, piles of dead, bodies without number, people stumbling over the corpses. With open derision, Nahum sings this song to mourn the downfall of the city of blood. A fitting epitaph for Nineveh, the capital city of an empire that terrorized the world by slaughtering others. Listen as Nahum bombards us with the sounds and sights of war. The crack of whips, the clatter of wheels, galloping horses, jolting chariots, charging cavalry, flashing swords, glittering spears. This is the tumult of combat as the conquering armies match Assyria's war machine, turn for turn. Then, like Paul Rusesa Bagina in the film Hotel Rwanda, stepping out of the van on the River Road Drive back to the hotel, we're suddenly caught up in the barbarity of the human carnage as both the invaded and the invaders trip over the corpses of those violently slain. There's no glorification of the conquering Medes and Babylonians in this downfall of Nineveh. Nahum's gruesome image imprints upon us the inevitable outcome of violent empires as each new military power bites and devours another. Those who live by the sword will die by the sword. Nahum's image of the city of blood throws us back all the way to the story of Cain and Abel in Genesis 4. With Cain's sins as the first brother slayer and city builder now writ large on human civilization. Nineveh has become the head of an empire alienated from both God and fellow human beings, the arch rival to the civilization Yahweh would build through humans in his image. Interestingly, in only 70 more years, Ezekiel will use this same epitaph, the bloody city, to describe Jerusalem, as he forewarns Judah's capital that her violence will likewise call down Babylonian violence upon her own head. All this has happened, Nahum tells us in verse 4, because of the wanton lust of a prostitute, alluring the mistress of sorceries who enslaved nations by her prostitution and peoples by her witchcraft. Switching from language that evoked Cain's first sins, Nahum now stacks up devastating descriptions of a woman gone deeply wrong to describe this archetypal city, not just given over to prostitution, but addicted to the power of it, having turned it to her advantage to entice, bewitch, and enslave others. So what is an archetype? And why use these graphic and disturbing female images to describe this evil empire? An archetype sums up all the best, or in this case, worst characteristics of human civilization in one representative example. By using female imagery here, Nahum is likely drawing together complex images of Ishtar, Assyria's goddess of love and war, casting her as a dominatrix who has humiliated the nations for her own pleasure and gain. Within 70 years, Ezekiel will also apply this prostitute imagery to Jerusalem as her citizens, worshippers of the Queen of Heaven, a popular name for Ishtar, are likewise conquered by Babylon. A second possibility for the female imagery returns us to the conflict in Genesis chapter 3, where God proclaims a state of war between two rival builders of human civilizations, the offspring of the serpent and the offspring of the woman. This motif depicts rebellious human civilization as a twisted, corrupt caricature of God's woman that cultivates a culture of death, where violence, idolatry, and alienation reign in place of God's intended life-giving community that multiplies good. And perhaps Nahum is using both possibilities to build upon each other. Nonetheless, like in Psalm 2, the Lord enthroned in the heavens scoffs at the city so arrogantly confident in her powers, exposing her to be a parody of true human life. Verse 5, I am against you, declares the Lord Almighty. I will lift your skirts over your face. I will show the nations your nakedness and the kingdoms your shame. Did you catch the two references to the Genesis 3 story? The twin terms of nakedness and shame? Just as the first man and woman's sin left them naked and ashamed, God will expose the evil empire's corrupt caricature of human civilization for what it is. The antithesis of God's kingdom of goodness and glory. God's response to this is shocking. Verse 6. I will pelt you with filth. I will treat you with contempt and make you a spectacle. All who see you will flee from you and say, Nineveh is in ruins. Who will mourn for her? Where can you find anyone to comfort you? What is God doing here? At first, it almost sounds abusive, doesn't it? As if Jesus were to have picked up stones in John chapter 8 to throw at the adulterous woman in condemnation, instead of sending her home free from her sin. That's why remembering how satire works is so important. Its intent is to humble, to ridicule, and discredit a proud opponent, exposing how their grand claims will come to nothing. Also, remember, God isn't speaking about an individual here. He's talking about a counterfeit civilization, one that with Orwellian doublespeak has twisted what is shameful and evil and called it desirable and good. And like Orwell's Animal Farm that represented Bolshevik leaders as pigs, God is making Nineveh's distorted human image so repulsive that all who see it will turn and run. Verse 8. Are you better than Thebes, situated on the Nile? The river was her defense. Yet she was taken captive and went into exile. You too will become drunk. You too will go into hiding and seek refuge from the enemy. Can you hear Nahum's mocking boast? Are you better than Thebes? Nineveh, the conquering city, will be conquered just like Thebes, and its citizens will be turned out as refugees. Listen, as Nahum belittles all Assyria's points of pride. All your fortresses are like fig trees with their first ripe fruit. When they're shaken, the figs fall into the mouth of the eater. Her cities will become easy pickings for those who want to devour them. Look at your troops. They are weaklings. The gates of your land are wide open to your enemies. Fire has consumed the bars of your gates. Nineveh's troops, once most feared, are weak compared to their enemy. Her gates, meant to protect the city, are burnt down, leaving the city wide open to attack. Draw water for the siege. Strengthen your defenses. Work the clay, tread the mortar, repair the brickwork. Here it is again, a mocking call to Nineveh to try to pull it all together. But to no avail. Verse 15. There the fire will consume you. The sword will cut you down. They will devour you like a swarm of locusts. Assyria, the devourer, will be devoured, consumed, cut down, left stripped and bare like land after a locust plague. Multiply like grasshoppers, multiply like locusts. You have increased the number of your merchants till they're more numerous than the stars in the sky. But like locusts, they strip the land and then fly away. Your guards, your officials are like swarms of locusts that settle in the walls on a cold day. But when the sun appears, they fly away and no one knows where. First, they're Nineveh's attackers who devour like a swarm of locusts. But all of a sudden, Nineveh's merchants, her guards, and her officials within the city are described like locusts, eating whatever remains of her wealth. The city was self-deceived. Like locusts, they devour today, but are gone tomorrow, leaving nothing good behind them. Once thinking herself a lion's den, strong, safe, and secure, Nineveh's demise will expose her inner rottenness. Nothing but a pestilence, a blight upon humanity. King of Assyria, your shepherds slumber, your nobles lie down to rest. Your people are scattered, with no one to gather them. Nothing can heal you. Your wound is fatal. All who hear the news about you clap their hands at your fall. For who has not felt your endless cruelty? Assyria's caricature of a great human civilization is shattered, scattered, with no one to gather them. Nothing can heal you. Your wound is fatal. So what is the final word on the king of Assyria? Nahum's song of woe ends with a satirical celebration. Instead of mourning, this song ends with claps of glee. Imagine Nahum standing on Assyria's coffin to lead the crowd in cheers. Remember, in the 660s BC, the devastating effects of the Assyrian Empire, both outside and inside of Judah, have made life incredibly dark and difficult, and hope for Judah's faithful is really hard to hold on to. Nahum's well-placed satire was intended to strengthen the faithful, reminding them that it's laughable to think any civilization built on human arrogance can stand for long against the living God. So what should we do when we're struggling to hold on to hope and feel weary of working to establish God's community in the midst of an evil world? Here's one way to apply Nahum's word of comfort. Laugh. Join with the Lord and laugh. Laugh with him at the futility of human evil as it tries to resist the goodness of Almighty God.